For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site. It's April 25th, and we're in Malachim. That makes more sense. Okay, good. The thing is, the story is so big, and as you see, I'm in many different places at once over here. We have to begin with a major mistake that I made in the past 2 weeks. It's not so bad. I really feel bad about it because I knew it and I forgot about it. So we're going to have to correct it. Okay, you'll recall that in Divrei Hayamim we learned that in Chizkiyahu's first year, see, I want to go back online and fix everything. But you'll recall that in Chizkiyahu's first year, he did incredible things. He turned around the whole country 180 degrees and eradicated all of, not just the Avodah Zarah, but all the Bamos, everything. He made it, he really changed everything around. You'll recall that the people were shocked by how quickly things turned around and had trouble accepting the change. And as a result, very few people jumped onto the bandwagon when Chizkiyahu started fixing things up. And there were very few Kohanim and Levim who reported for duty in order to fix up the Beis HaMikdash, which had been completely defiled by his father Ahaz. And so they tried their best to complete the work of being Metahar, the Beis HaMikdash. They started on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It took them 16 days to complete the Tara of the Beis HaMikdash, which was too late for Pesach. They missed Pesach. So they delayed until Pesach Sheni, till Iyar. And at that point, then a lot more people came, and there were a lot of Kohanim and Levim, and they had a huge, huge celebration of Pesach in Iyar, rather than in Nisan. And this was because it says in Divrei Hayamim that they made Pesach Bachodesh HaSheni in the second month. So far, sort of so good. here's the error that I made, and I apologize for it, and it's something that I should have remembered. So I mentioned to you that Chizkiyahu did six courageous things that no one else would have had the courage to do. Of three of them, Chazal, in his day, meaning the Chachamim, he was the Gadol Adar, but the rest of the Chachamim were modet him, they agreed with him, and three of them they disagreed. So we mentioned the three that they agreed with was that he cut down the Nachash HaNechoshes, he cut down the copper snake that Moshe Rabbeinu had made. We talked about how courageous that was because it was something Moshe Rabbeinu had himself made, and now to cut it down and get rid of it, that was very courageous, but because people had turned it into somewhat of an Avodah Zarah. He also dragged his father's bones on a bed of ropes, which was not kavod, which his father, who was a big rasha, so rather than give him a kavod in his burial, he made his burial a degrading experience, which both was for kapara for his father and also in order that people should not learn from his father's actions. And the third thing, which I don't think we mentioned before, was he was gonei sefer harufuos. Shlomo HaMelech had written a book of refuos, I guess you call it medicines, but ways of healing ailments. And it was not, it wasn't hocus pocus, it actually worked. It was real remedies for ailments. And when people got sick, they consulted the Sefer HaRefuos and they were able to heal themselves. Chizkiyahu HaMelech hid it. He put it away. Did not let people have access to it because people were relying on the Book of Refuos rather than on a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Those three things, the Talmidei Chachamim of his generation agreed with what he did. I was once teaching this to a group of doctors. They could not accept this. They couldn't accept that it was better to put away the Book of Remedies the book of Rufus rather than to hold on to it. It was something that they had a very hard time with. But anyway, that is those three things they agreed with him. Then there are three things that he did which they did not agree. Now two of them we have not yet covered. They're going to be in the way that he defended himself from Sancheirev, so they did not agree with some of what he did to protect himself from Sancheirev. We'll talk about that when we get to those points. But one of them, which is the one that I forgot about, is this point that about Pesach. You see, let me find the right pasuk over here. In Divrei Hayamim, the pasuk says that they had this big celebration in the second month. Days. Divrei Hayamim days. It's, I believe, Perek Lamed. Yeah. So it says that they did this whole celebration in the second month. So, I just want to find the exact pasuk here. It's pasuk Perek Lamed. Dirayim Beis Perek Lamed, pasuk Beis. The pasuk says, "Va'ivaatz haMelech v'sarav v'chol haKahal b'Yerushalayim." The king and his officers and all the Kahal, all the congregation in Yerushalayim, they decided lasas haPesach b'chodesh haSheni, to make Pesach in the second month. It does not mean Pesach Sheni. What it means is that Chizkiyahu haMelech made it a leap year, meaning that there had only been one Adar, which means that if there's only one Adar, if you're in Adar, then next month is Nisan. 2 months from now is Iyar. If you make it a leap year, then instead of next month being Nisan, 2 months from now is Nisan. So he made a leap year because he knew that they were not going to be able to get the Beis HaMikdash ready in time for Pesach. So he made it a leap year, adding another month, and that way they did Pesach in the second month, meaning in Nisan, which was 2 months away from Adar because they made a leap year. Okay, so that is fine. But why is it written this way? That's not the second month, that's the first month of the year. And second of all, what's the big deal? He did it on the 30th day of Adar. Now, which means like this. Every month has at least 29 days. Can't have a month with less than 29 days. The 30th day could either be the 30th day of the current month or the first day of the next month. That's the swing day. If it's a leap month, then the month has 30 days. If it's not a leap month, then the month only has 29 days. The 30th day of Adar could either be the 30th day of Adar or it could be Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It was the 30th day of Adar and which really, and the Edom had not yet come, the witnesses had not yet come. Remember, in those days, they made the months based on when the witnesses came. So it was the 30th day of Adar. The witnesses could still have shown up and said, today is not the 30th of Adar, it's rather the Rosh Chodesh Nisan. It's the first day of the next month. The witnesses had not yet come. And at that point, he decided to turn it into a leap year. Which means even if the witnesses would come today, today won't be the first day of Nisan, it'll be the first day of Adar Beis. However, the Talmidei Chacham of his dar disagreed with him and they said, you're not supposed to make a leap year on a day which is able to be Nisan. We know the pasuk says Achonish Hazal Lachem Rosh Chodashim, that Nisan has to be the first month of the year. You can't make Nisan the 13th month of the year. When we make a leap year, we take what would have been Nisan and we turn it into the 13th month of the year rather than being the first month of the next year. But that's okay because we proclaim it as a leap year before the month comes. So before the month comes, we announce that it is not the first month of the next year, but rather it's the 13th month of this year. But on the 30th day of Adar, you're already standing on a day which could turn into Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Chizkiyahu held, you're allowed still to make that next month into Adar Beis, because the Edom have not yet come, so therefore we have not yet turned it into Nisan. So we're allowed to announce that the next month, which may start today, which may start tomorrow, depending when the Edom come, will be not Nisan, but Rosh Chodesh Adar Beis. The next month will be Adar Beis. But the other Talmidei Chachamim held, once it's possible for the day you are on to be Nisan, you're no longer allowed to make a leap year. You can't turn that month into a different month, because you're already within the tzivoy, the commandment of HaKodesh Hazeh Lachem Rosh Chodeshim. This is the first month of the year. You can't turn it into something else. So this was a disagreement. That's why the Navi refers to Pesach that they made in the, they said, it says that they did it in the second month. It wasn't the second month. It was, according to what Chizkiyahu did, it was the first month of the year. It was Nisan, because he had added a month to the previous year. But because they disagreed with him and held what he did was wrong, the Navi refers to it as the second month, because had he not done what he did, then it would have been Iyar rather than Nisan. So it's not that they made a Pesach Sheni, it was a Pesach Rishon. Once he did it, it was done, and it counted, and it was a leap year the previous year, and therefore Pesach was in Nisan as it's supposed to be. But because the method of having made the previous year a leap year, and therefore the method of having made this month Nisan rather than Iyar, since that method was questionable, the Navi calls it the second month of the year. That's actually what happened. And therefore, that was my mistake the past couple of weeks when we talked about it. And it really was the Nisan. And what happened is that on the 30th day of Adar, Chizkiyahu realized they would never be able to get that Beis HaMikdash ready in time. As it is, they almost made it. They got it ready 16 days later, but it was too close to call. So he made it into a leap year, but the other Chachamim held he really should not have made it into a leap year. You have a question?
It just seems like the kind of thing you'd want to discuss way in advance.
Depends how much time you have. I mean, he may have realized only then how little time he had. He could have thought that until then, more people would have come to help. Remember, we discussed that the reason why they weren't able to get the Beis HaMikdash ready in time is they were shorthanded. Had more Kohanim Levim shown up, then they would have been able to do it. And it could be it was only then he realized they're never going to make it. So, and only a few hours left in the day, so he made it a leap year.
What's the normal procedure for making the leap year? Not now, but then.
Yeah, so the normal procedure was you needed to have a Beis Din, and they would make it into a neighbor yard.
Normally it would be decided earlier.
They would get together and discuss it. They would go over how there were different reasons, the Gemara says, for making a leap year, having to do with the crops, having to do with the roads, various things like that. And then of course also the way the Yom Tovim fell out, and if they realized that they needed to do it, so then they would do it. But it would be a debate amongst the Beis Din.
And so they would do it. I mean, it would also really be the same day, right? Because, I mean, it would be, they just would have decided before.
Yeah, it would have been decided earlier. It could have been a debate that took a few days. It didn't have to be all in one day. But typically, if they're all there, there's no reason for it to take more than one day. But it would have been done earlier. They didn't do it in the summertime. They always did it after Rosh Hashanah of that year. They always did it into the winter. But then during that time, they would make a decision. But there was enough time that they would make a decision and word would get around. Sometimes they had to wait until Adar before making the decision, just because they didn't know what the weather was going to be like. And they would see whether the world had warmed up or not.
It was a total practical
reason. Yeah, completely practical. Completely practical. Except the Gemara tells us that they really knew, like, for example, when it comes to the months, 29-day month, 30-day month, so Today it's all set in the calendar. Their day was through Adam. Rabban Gamliel was such a bucky, he was such an expert in astronomy, he knew before the Adam came whether it was possible for Adam to come or not. So when they came and he would give them the third degree, he knew whether they were liars or telling the truth before they opened their mouths. Because he knew. He had it all figured out. He figured it out months in advance. He had it all worked out. So he had. But the Torah says to do it al pi ri'iyah, to do it through Adam. So they had to go through the motions of the Adam. With the years also, they really had it worked out in advance, many years in advance. But they did it, they deliberated at the time rather than do it. You know, the Gemara says not to do it more than 1 year at a time, to make that decision at that time.
And the clouds could make a difference, like the weather?
The weather would make a difference, yeah. Yeah.
So let's say Habakkuk, Rabban Gamliel know the weather.
You mean for the moon? Yeah, that could happen. You mean it would be too cloudy, no one would see it?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. He would know whether it's possible for them to have seen it. That he would know. Yeah. Okay, so that was that. We had to correct that. So that's what happened then, and that was something which they disagreed about that he did. Now back to where we're up to. In Malachim Beis Yerches, chapter 18, and you said Pasuk Chavav?
Yes.
26. Okay. We were dealing with that Sancheriv had sent Rav Shake and two others to Sancheriv, and he essentially told Chizkiyo, you're a big talker, that before you rebelled against Sancheriv, you weren't willing to accept him, his sovereignty, but now that he's ready for you, now that he's here with an army, so you'll never be able to defend yourself against him. And what can you do? And he taunted Chizkiyo. No, Chizkiyo was not present. Chizkiyo sent three people to meet Rav Shake. And those three people are, in Pasuk Yerches, we learned it was Eliakim ben Chilkiyo Asher Labayis. I want you to remember that name. Eliakim ben Chilkiyo, he will be a prominent person. Shevna HaSofer, I told you last time to remember his name, Shevna. And Yoach ben Asaf HaMazkir. Those are the three people that represented Chizkiyahu. Just as Sancheriv did not come himself, he sent his emissary, Rav Shake. So Chizkiyahu also sent his three representatives. And they had this discussion. And he taunted, Rav Shake taunted Chizkiyahu. Rav Shake was a Yisrael Mummer. He was a Jew who had defected to Sancheriv. Defecting does not only mean switching sides in battle. It means repudiating Torah and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He had gone away from Torah. He was now an Oved Avodah Zarah. He was a Mummer. And he represented Sancheriv. And that's why he's able to use references and things that are very knowledgeable of how the Jews behave and live, because he himself had been a Jew, or was a Jew. So he's taunting them. And he's saying, how can you turn away Sancheriv? And now I invite you to join Sancheriv. So, Pasuk Chavah, verse 26. Vayomer Eliakim ben Chilkiyo v'Shevna v'Yoach el Rav Shake. So these three people, Eliakim ben Chilkiyo, Shevna, and Yoach, all said to Rav Shake, Daber na'el avadecha aramis. Speak now to your servants in Aramaic. Ki shomim anachnu, because we can understand. We know Aramis. We are familiar with your tongue, with your language. Ve'al tedabreim anu Yehudis, don't speak in Hebrew, be'aznei ha'am, in the ears of the nation, asher alachoma, that are on the walls. Rav Shake was making a spectacle of himself, yelling and screaming, and he was doing it in Hebrew, which he knew. And as a result, all the people in the vicinity were able to hear. So the three emissaries of Chizkiyo said, let's deal between ourselves over here. We're dealing with king to king. We want to have a conversation. We want to decide what to do. Talk to us in Aramis. Let's not make this a public thing. But Rav Shake wanted it to be a public thing. Vayomar leim Rav Shake, ha'al adonecha ve'elecha shalachani adoni, Is it only on you and your master that my master sent me? L'daber es hadvarim ha'el, to speak these words? Halo ala anashim ha'yoshim ala choma. I am speaking to the people who are standing on the wall. I'm warning them that if you don't listen, there's going to be a siege of Yerushalayim, which is going to cause a great famine. They will have nothing to eat. Lechol es, so asam, we read that word. And v'lishtos es, meimei raglehem, imachem. Which means they will be forced to eat their excrement and drink their urine with you. There will be nothing to eat or drink. That's how bad it's going to be. And I want them to hear this. They're the ones I'm speaking to. Vayamod Rav Shake, Vayikra b'kol gadol Yehudis. Rav Shake stood up and he cried out in a great cry, in a very loud voice, in Hebrew. Vayidaber vayom, when he spoke and he said, Shimu dvar ha-melech ha-gadol melech ha-ashur. Listen to the words of the great king, the king of Ashur. Ko amar ha-melech, so says the king, al yashi lachem chizkiyo, do not let chizkiyo convince you. Ki lo yuchal la-hatzil eschem miyado, he will not be able to save you from his, from Sancheriv's hands. Val yavtach eschem chizkiyo el Hashem lemar, do not let chizkiyo give you reliance on Hashem, saying, "Hatzel yatzilenu Hashem, Hashem will save us." V'lo sina sina suir azos beyond melech Ashur, the ear will not be given over to the king of Ashur. Al tishmu al chizkiyo, do not listen to chizkiyo. Ki chama melech Ashur, for so says the king Ashur. Asu iti viracha utzu elai. Make with me a connection, a covenant. Rashi says, a shelas shalom, a peaceful gesture, and come out to me. V'ichlu ish gafno v'ish teina, so each person will then eat from their own vine, their own vineyard, and from their own fig tree. Ushesu ish mei voro, each man will drink from his own pit of water, meaning you'll have your own places to live, you'll live in comfort. Ad bo'i v'lo kachti eschem al eretz ka'artzechem, I will take you, I will come and take you to a land similar to your own. Eretz Dagon Visirosh, a land that has grain and has wine. Eretz Lechem Uchramim, a land of bread and of vineyards. Eretz Zeis Yitzharu Dvash, a land of olive oil and honey. V'ichyu v'lo samusu, you will live and not die. V'al tishmu el chizkiyo, do not listen to chizkiyo, ki yasis eschem lemar, that he's trying to convince you, saying, Hashem yatzilenu, Hashem will save us. The Gemara tells us, Sancheirev was Meval Belas Kol Ha'umos. His MO was that when he conquered a nation, he picked them up and moved them elsewhere. That's what he did to the Aseres HaShvatim, to the ten tribes. That's what he did with the people who he replaced the Aseres HaShvatim with, the Kusim, when he moved them in. And he did that all around the globe, which is why today we do not know who is who. The reason we don't know who is Amalek, we don't know who is Moab, who is Ammon. The reason for this is because of Sancheirev. After Sancheirev, he was mevalbel as kol ha'umos. He mixed everybody up, and now we do not know who is who. The Gemara tells a story about Yehuda Ger Ammoni. He was a Ger from Ammon, and he wanted to marry a Jewish girl. He was a Ger, and he wanted to marry a Jewish girl. There's a debate in the Gemara. How could he marry the Jewish girl? We know we paskin. The Gemara says, the Pasuk says, that a Moavi cannot marry into the Jewish people. Which doesn't mean they can't convert. It means that even though they can convert, they cannot marry into the Jewish people. A male convert from Moab or Ammon can't marry into the Jewish people. But the Gemara says back, now that Sancheirev has been mevalbel as kol ha'umos, he's mixed everybody up, we don't know that this person is actually from Ammon. He may come from the geographical location of Ammon, but that does not make him an Ammoni. And therefore he was allowed to marry into the Jewish people. That is all because of Sancheirev, because we don't know who is who because of him. This was what he did. And here Rav Shaki is telling the Jewish people, I'm going to do the same thing to you. If you come out peacefully, you won't get hurt, you'll get moved. And you can get Tunisia if you want. You can get someplace else. And it'll be a land that's as good as the land that you're in. Yeah.
Didn't Yosef do that when people had to give up their land to him? Didn't he move people around too?
He moved the Egyptians around, but they were still within Egypt. He didn't mix up the different nations.
Okay.
Right. Now, the Gemara tells us that Rav Shaki was careful with the words he chose. He says in this pasuk, El Eretz Ka'artzechem, I will take you to a land like your land. This was very calculated. He could have said, I'm going to give you a better land than your land, which is what he would have told anybody but the Jews. Because the Jews knew there cannot be a land better than Eretz Yisrael. And if he would have said that, they would have immediately said, you're a liar, and who knows what you're going to do to us. And he was trying to convince them to give up peacefully. So he told them, I'll bring you to a land like your own, rather than better than your own, because he knew he couldn't go that far. The Jews would have rejected anything, any suggestion that there was a land better than Eretz Yisrael. Lamed Gimel 33. Have the gods of the other nations saved their lands? Mi'ar Melech Ashur? From the king of Ashur? Aye Elohei Hamas ve'Arpad. Where is the god of Hamas and Arpad? Aye Elohei Sifar Vayim. Where is the god of Sifar Vayim? Heina ve'Iva and Heina and Iva. Ki Yitzilu es Shomron Mi'adi. That they would save Shomron from me, which was the deities that were being served by the northern kingdom, the Avodah Zarahs, they didn't save them. Mi b'chol Elohei Aratzos asher hitzilu es aretzam miyadi. Who from all of the gods of the lands have saved the land from me, from Sancheriv? Ki yatzil Hashem es Yerushalayim miyadi, that Hashem will save Yerushalayim from my hands. This was a terrible, terrible chiruf and giduf. This, the Gemara likens this to cursing God Himself, because He is speaking as if Hashem is no different than all the other toevos, all the other abominations that the other nations believe falsely to be gods. So He's equating Hashem to Avodah Zarah. It's a terrible, terrible thing to say. As you'll see, there's going to be a reaction to this. The nation was quiet. They did not answer him. Because it was the commandment of the king saying, do not answer him. Chizkiyahu had already anticipated that Rabshakeh would say very terrible things and warned everybody to keep quiet. So these three, Eliakim ben Chilkiyah, who was in charge of the house, Shevna, the scribe, and Yoach, who Ben Asaf, who was the Mazkir, he's the one who arranged the court. They came to Chizkiyahu, Kiruei Vegadim, with torn clothing. Vayagidu lo esdivrei Ravshakeh, and they told him, Ravshakeh, and they told him the words of Ravshakeh. Why were their clothing torn? Why was the clothing torn?
Sign of warning.
Because they heard
Hashem's name blasphemed.
Right, that's right. Because the halacha is, if a person hears Hashem's name being cursed or spoken about in that way, anybody present has to tear their clothing when they hear such a terrible thing. There is a debate in the Gemara whether this is true when a non-Jew denigrates Hashem. The Gemara says, according to one opinion, the Gemara says, it can't be that we tear our clothes when a non-Jew denigrates Hashem, because if that were true, all our clothing would be torn in all over the place. We would have nothing but tatters to wear because of how all the degradation that goes on. So therefore, it's limited to a Jew. But as I mentioned to you, Ravshakeh was a Jew. Therefore, everybody agrees with Ravshakeh that they had to tear their clothing when they heard him denigrate Hashem. Let me pause here and just mention these halachos of hearing the name of Hashem degraded. But those of you who attend the Sunday shir, you heard this recently because we spoke about it with the one who cursed Hashem in Parshas Emor. But for this shir, so as I said, the halacha is that if a person hears the name of Hashem being degraded in that way and cursed, one is required to tear their clothing. The Gemara says that if witnesses heard a person, a Jew, curse Hashem, and he was warned and he did it anyway, so the punishment is skila. The person gets stoned for that. The witnesses have to testify about what happened. So they bring the man to court and they have to testify. The Gemara says the entire day that they're going through the deliberation of this court case, the witnesses speak bekinui. They speak with a name to replace Hashem's name. They don't say Hashem, they say Yossi. This man, he cursed Yossi. What did he say? He said, Yaka Yossi es Yossi. They use the term Yossi. They don't use the term Hashem, because they shouldn't even though they're only quoting what the other person had said. They shouldn't let those words come out of their mouth. The Gemara doesn't even call it cursing Hashem. The Gemara calls cursing Hashem birchas Hashem, mm-hmm. blessing Hashem. Mm-hmm. That's a euphemism.
Even say that.
Right. So to repeat the words that he said, you can't do that. However, the Gemara says you can't put him to death without a direct testimony about what he said. So at the end of the day, if they're ready to put him to death, the witnesses have to say what they heard. So the Mishnah says that they threw everybody out of the courtroom except for the judges, the two witnesses, and the defendant, the one who is being accused of cursing Hashem. That's it. Everybody else is thrown out of the courtroom. They tell the chief witness, the oldest one, to say what he heard exactly. And he gets up and he says exactly the words that he heard the defendant say. When he says that, the judges who are sitting, the judges are have to be seated, they stand up and they tear their clothes. Then they say to the second witness, did you hear the same thing? They don't let him say it. Did you hear the same thing? He says yes. Then they put him to death. And they wait. It goes till it, they don't put him to death that day. They wait till the next day. Then they put him to death. But that's but they can't. They have to hear the words, but then they have to tear their clothes. So the witness says it only once, and with the minimum amount of people in the courtroom, the judges get up and tear their clothes, and then they say to the second witness, "Did you hear the same thing?" Yes. Okay. That's the end of the court case.
They couldn't do that to Rav Shaki.
Yeah, okay. Right. This is not a court case. So.
No, like they couldn't put him, give him skila.
Oh, he's got a whole entourage with him. He's here in force.
Yeah.
He's got teeth.
He didn't have warning.
He's got teeth. He's not here by himself. He's got a whole. Army. He's here in force.
Protection.
Yeah, yeah, oh yeah. Not just protection. He's got a bigger army than Chizkiyahu does, yeah. And it's not the whole army of Sancheriv. He's got it, you know. Yeah. Sancheriv's army was incredibly huge. If the numbers are literal, we've never seen an army this big, even in World War II. The army was unbelievably big. So that's where we are right now. So Rav Shalkei has denigrated Hashem's name, and now the three emissaries of Chizkiyahu have come, and they are now about to they report to Chizkiyahu what happened. Perek Yates, Pasuk Aleph. When Chizkiyahu heard this, so he tore his clothes. And he put on sackcloth. And he came to the Beis HaMikdash. Now, he's going to daven. Chizkiyahu is going to daven for help. But he's also going to send for help. And so he sent Eliakim in charge of the bayis and Shemna Sofer and the Ziknei Akonim, miskasim basakim, all wearing sackcloth, El Yeshayahu Anavi Ben Amotz, to Yeshayahu. As I mentioned to you, a lot of this story is repeated, and many more details are also said in Sefer Yeshayahu. So, because he this is concurrent with much of the Sefer Yeshayahu. So they sent messengers to Yeshayahu. And they said to him, so says Chizkiyahu, this is a day of pain and of admonishment and anger. Because the children have come to the mashber. And there's no strength to give birth. The mashber is the birthing stool. They are saying a mashal for a woman who comes to the birthing stool but has no koach to actually birth the baby. So there is tremendous pain and suffering, and there's no relief. There's no way to help the situation. Pasuk Dalet, verse 4, Ulai Yishma Hashem Elokecha, maybe Hashem your God will listen. Eis kol divrei Rav Shaki, you'll hear all the words of Rav Shaki, Asher Shlacho Melech Ashur Adonav, then his master, the king of Ashur, sent him, L'charef Elokim Chayim, to degrade the living God. V'ochiach badvarim Asher Shama Hashem Elokecha, and he even brought proof to his words. Rav Shaki did that. Hashem heard the words. V'nasasa sfila, and maybe you Yeshayahu will lift up davening be'ad hasheris hanimtza, on behalf of the remnant that is found. Maybe you will be able to daven for us. So now Yeshayahu sends them back to Chizkiyahu. Vayavo Abdi HaMelech Chizkiyo El Yishayo. So the servants of the king of Chizkiyo came back to Yishayo. Vayom Elam Yishayo. And Yishayo said to them, Ko Somrun El Adonechem, so you shall say to your master, Ko Amar Hashem, so says Hashem, Al Tira Mivnei Advarim Asher Shamata. Do not be afraid of the words that you heard. Asher Gidfu Na'arei Melech Ashurosi, that the lads, he himself is using derogatory terminology, that the lads of the king of Ashur degraded me. Hinani no sein bo ruach, I am going to put spirit into Sancheriv. Vishama Shmuel, he will hear news. Vishavla Arton, return to his nation. Vipaltiv Bacheriv Ba'artso, and I will strike him down by the sword in his land. Now, there's a lot packed into this pasuk which is not clear. Let me tell you chronologically what happened, and then we'll fit into this pasuk. Right now, Rav Shake is at the door of Yerushalayim with a whole army, and he's threatening and speaking terrible things to the three emissaries of Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu tears his clothes, puts on sackcloth, sends messengers to Yeshayahu. He sends back, don't worry, here's what's going to happen. First of all, they're going to get distracted. Something is going to happen, and that's going to make them leave. The army of Sanherib is going to get diverted. There's going to be a disturbance in Cush. In Cush is Ethiopia. There's going to be a disturbance. The army of Sanherib is going to have to go to deal with that. And so they're going to leave, and there will be a reprieve for a short time. They will be back. But when they get back, then I will make Sancheriv return to his land, and I will strike him down in his land. It is more embarrassing for the king to get knocked, to get killed in his own land than in a foreign land. It's one thing to go someplace and have a war and get killed in the war. It's another thing to go back home and get killed at home. And he's going to make sure that Sancheriv ends up getting killed in Ashur itself. The capital of Ashur, anybody know, is Nineveh. Nineveh of Yonah fame is the capital of Ashur. So he's going to go back to Nineveh and get struck down over there. So there's the way you read this pasuk is, I'm going to put spirit in him and he will have news. The news is going to make him get distracted and leave for a short time. Then after he comes back to fight with you again, Vishav la'artso, he'll go back to his land. V'paltiv v'cherev v'artso, I'll knock him down. I'll kill him by the sword in his own land. So there's two different things that are going to happen over here. So let's read just a little further, and then I'm going to fill you in with something which is not in the Navi here. It is hinted to in Yeshayo, but the Gemara makes a great deal out of it. Verse 8. Rav Shake went back and found the king of Ashur fighting with Livna. Because he had heard, Rav Shake had heard that Sancheriv had traveled away from Lachish. Vayishma el Tirhaka melech Kush lemar, he heard that Tirhaka, the king of Kush, saying, Hine yatza li lachem itach, he is going out to fight with you. The king of Kush, Tirhaka, has come out to fight with you. He is rebelling against you. Vayasha vayishlach malachim, okay, stop there. Vayasha vayishlach malachim el Chizkiyo lemar. So then, when Rav Shake realized that they were going to get distracted now, then now his master was going off to other battles, so he sends another message to Chizkiyahu. And in this other message, he's going to tell him that don't worry, we'll be back. Don't think you're going to be saved. Now, we're going to stop here for now, because this is going to be the second discussion between Rav Shake and Chizkiyahu. Why is it that Hashem made this reprieve and sent off Sancheriv to another battle with Livna, with Cush? They have these other battles, and then come back to Yerushalayim. The reason is because Hashem is padding the pockets of Sancheriv's army, so that when they do get completely decimated at Yerushalayim's door, there'll be far more spoils of war for the Jewish people. So Hashem is giving more. This is a chesed from Hashem to have him leave, beat up on some other nations, pad his pockets with their gold, then come back to Yerushalayim, and then get knocked down, and all the gold belongs to the Jewish people. So that is what happens over here. There is drama going on, though, right now, with the three emissaries of Chizkiyahu. The three were, as we mentioned before, they are Eliakim ben Chilkiah, Shevna Sofer, and Yoach ben Asaf. Yoach ben Asaf does not play a role, at least not a prominent role in this. But the other two, Eliakim ben Chilkiah and Shevna Sofer, play a prominent role in what is about to happen. In this first back and forth, this first, it's not really a discussion, but the first time that Rav Shaki is at the doors of Yerushalayim and threatening, the Gemara tells us Shevna was a Talmud Chacham. Chizkiyahu was a Talmud Chacham. Chizkiyahu wasn't just a Talmud Chacham, he was the Gadol Adar. Shevna was no slouch. He was a big Talmud Chacham. The Gemara tells us Shevna was, he was Darash B'Tleisar Misivta. Shevna, he had 13 Batei Midrashos that were in his corner. Chizkiyahu had only 11. What that means to say is, Shevna had a bigger following than Chizkiyahu. Even though Chizkiyahu was the king and the Gadol Adar, but Shevna was more popular. Shevna was a popular person and a big Talmid Chacham. But he's going to be one of these Talmid Chacham who unfortunately falls. When this whole thing happens with Rav Shakeh, yeah.
Can you speak a little bit about that or other examples? It's, you know, it's fine to be a very righteous person and even the king and the leader, or it's fine to be a great rabbi, but can you speak a little more about this, about other examples where it's good to bring in other rabbis for support, you know, or other examples?
I'm not sure what you mean by bringing other rabbis.
I know that Moshe had asked...
But I'm sorry, but what does that have to do with this story here?
Like, Moshe had asked for wisdom and nevuah to be given to the elders of Israel. He
right.
didn't need it all for him, right? So you're saying Shevna had a popular following. One person could be a greater Talmud Chacham, but you increase Torah among the population if you have more.
Well, I'm not sure if it means he taught. I don't know what it means. I don't know how he was more popular. It doesn't tell us that. It just says a fact that Shevna had a greater following than Chizkiyahu.
But he brings him in to reinforce.
Brings who? Who brings who in?
Chizkiyahu.
No. Shevna was one of the leaders of the people. He's the sofer. He's the scribe, but he was a great Talmud Chacham. It doesn't say why or how Chizkiyahu brought him in. He was part of the leadership.
But he's sent to go talk to the Navi.
Yeah, because he's in a position of prominence. He's the sofer.
Okay.
Now this is not the only example we have of a great person who fell. Yeravam ben Nevat, who is forever known as the Chotim Machti Saravim, the one who made other people sin. The Gemara tells us he was a huge Talmud Chacham. He rivaled Shlomo Melech himself, and yet he fell precipitously. So did Doeg HaAdomi. So did Achitofel. They all lost their chelik in Olam Haba. Shevna was a great person in his own right. However, he had some flaws, and they ended up being his undoing. In this exchange with Rav Shakeh, Shevna saw an opportunity. He really had designs for the throne. He wanted to replace Chizkiyahu as king. He saw that Chizkiyahu's reign was crumbling, that he's about to get destroyed by Sancheriv. So Shevna saw an opportunity. So he took an arrow, and he took a note, and he wrote a note, and he shot the arrow over the wall to the camp of Rav Shakeh, not to hit anybody, to send the note. So he shot an arrow. Rav Shakeh got the note. The note said, Shevna Visiato, Shevna and his followers are ready to make shalom with Sancheriv. Chizkiyahu Visiato, Chizkiyahu and his followers are not ready to make shalom with Sancheriv. Meaning, we are ready to capitulate. I and my followers, we are ready to come out and join forces with you. The Gemara tells us that they opened the gates. This group opened the gates, so that Shevna and his followers could get out to join Rav Shake. When they opened the gate, Gavriel HaMalach came. Gavriel is going to be the Malach who's going to be involved here. He's the one on duty over here. He's taking care of this situation. So Gavriel HaMalach came and slammed the gate shut and sealed it behind Shevna with nobody else having made it out of the gate. Shevna's the only one who made it out. And then the gate got slammed shut and sealed shut. So now he's by himself. So he came to Rav Shake. He was grabbed by Rav Shake's people, and they brought to Rav Shake. And Rav Shake says, "Where's your entourage?" He says, "I guess they turned back." So Rav Shake says to him, "Then you're a liar. You told me you had a whole following. You obviously lied." To make matters worse, the Gemara tells us, Hashem struck Shevna with tzaras. So that now, because of the Lashon Hara, that note was Lashon Hara, that he said that I want to make peace with you and Chizkiyahu doesn't. That was Lashon Hara. So he got hit with tzaras. So here he is, a man who claimed to be this great leader of a lot of Jews, the majority of Jews, and here he is by himself, nobody with him, and he has tzaras. So the Gemara tells us, they bored holes in his feet, tied him to a horse, and dragged him through the fields. And he was killed in that manner. Mm-hmm. That's what happened to Shevna HaSofer. Mm-hmm. Shevna had actually gone, before this incident, had actually gone to the graveyards of the kings near Yerushalayim, and was setting up for himself a place which would be his grave eventually, because he felt that he was going to be king. Now, this story is not written anywhere in Tanakh explicitly, but it is alluded to in Sefer Yeshayahu. It is alluded to. I'll give you the address of the psukim so that you have it. If I can find it quickly enough, I'll give you the address. Otherwise, I'll have to give it to you next week. But this is the story of Shevna. The Gemara derives from here that even though Shevna was the rove, he was the majority, Chizkiyahu was afraid. He said, maybe since the majority are bad, Hashem will therefore punish Shevna and us as well, because he's the majority. So the Gemara over here says, a majority who are Rishayim don't count. When you count majority and minority in Halacha, the Rishayim don't get, Kesher Rishayim does not get counted into the discussion. The Pasuk, it is in Perek Chafal, chapter 21 of Yeshayahu. There are psukim here that mention things like kind of in a veiled way. But Shevna himself is mentioned. Let's see if we can find where Shevna himself is mentioned. Hold on. Yeah.
Bogeid v'shodeid.
I'm sorry?
Bogeid v'shodeid.
No. Perakhov Beis, chapter 22 in Yeshayahu, Pasuk Tesvav, verse 15. I'll read it to you. I know you don't have Yeshayahu in front of you. Komar Hashem Elokim Tzvakos. So says Hashem, Lech bo el ha-sochein hazeh, come to this sochein. Sochein means a person who is heavily involved in taivos, in pleasures. El Shevna asher al ha-bayis, to Shevna who is in charge of the bayis. Before Eliakim ben Hilkiah was in charge of the bayis, Shevna had been in charge of the bayis. So Hashem says, come to this Shevna who is involved in taivos, in desires. Malachafo, milachafo. What is this to you? What are you doing here? Who are you? Ki chatzavta lecha po kaver, that you dug for yourself a grave over here, referring to Shevna, who had gone to the graves of the kings to dig for himself a grave. Chotz vi marom kivro chokikiva sela mishkan lo. So it goes on discussing Shevna. Again, the words are not easy to translate. There's a reference here to Tsaras as well. In these psukim, the Gemara derives from these words that he got Tsaras. From the words... from the words Va'otcha Ato at the end of Pasuk Yud Zayin. They learn from there that he got Tsaras. And these are the psukim from which the story is learned from. And if you go further in Yeshayahu, to Pasuk Chaf, it says, V'ayabayamahu, and it will be on that day, V'karasi la'avi le'elyakim ben Chilkiyahu. I'm going to replace you with Elyakim ben Chilkiyahu. V'yobashtiv kutantecha, he will wear your cloak, V'avnetcha achazkenu, and I will strengthen him with your belt, V'avim shaldcha etein biyado, and your power I will give in his hands. So there's a reference to Shevna and a reference to Eliakim and Chilkiyahu. Eliakim and Chilkiyahu became a faithful servant of the house of David. I'll read one more pasuk here. I will put the key of Beis David on his shoulders. Meaning he's going to support the house of David. He will open, no one will close it. I mean, no one else can close the door if he opens it. If he closes it, no one can open it. He's going to be in charge. He's going to be the right-hand man of Beis David, which in this case is, of course, Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So it's referenced here in Perek Chaf Beis, chapter 22 of Yeshayahu. But as I said, it's not clear. The story is not clear. It is in the Gemara in Sanhedrin. You probably want to know what address. It's in Sanhedrin, and it is, I believe, on Daf Chaf Vav on 26. I believe that's where it is in Sanhedrin. So that's the story of Shevna. He will disappear once that first meeting between Rav Shakeh and these people is over, and they go off to Kush and the other places. Shevna is no longer going to be found because he has been given over into the hands of Sancheirev.
Did we ever address why Chizkiyahu and his daughter deserved all this trouble?
No. I mean, part of it is because Achaz was such a rasha. But what we talked about is that normally...
Fixed it up.
Right. That's what we mentioned a couple times ago, that normally when you see the country turn around 180 degrees, that everything works out fine. And here instead he's attacked. Right. So we have not addressed that yet. The direction we're going is, as you know, Chizkiyahu was supposed to be Mashiach. So what's happening is Hashem is setting the stage for Mashiach. That's what's happening over here. We find, and we're going to end now, but we'll have to continue this. It's going to take us, again, we have several more weeks of this. There's a lot of information here. We find that this story of Sancheirev and Chizkiyahu takes up many prakim in Divrei Hayomim, many prakim in Malachim, and many prakim in Yeshayahu. Many. Over and over again. And some of them are repeated. And one could think, I mean, there are a lot of interesting stories in Tanakh. Why does this appear in three different Sfarim over and over again? It's a major, major story because it is the story that most informs us of what it looks like when Mashiach is about to come. This is the story that shows us the process of getting to a point where a man can be Mashiach and a war can be Gog and Magog. And it just missed. That's what we're going to see. Yeah.
Yeshayahu doesn't say what's going to happen to Rav Shakeh. You would think that there's something going to get his due, right?
Right.
But why doesn't Yeshayahu?
I don't know why. I don't know why he doesn't say him. He's going to get killed like everybody else gets killed. He will get killed, but he does not address Rav Shakeh directly. Sancheirev is the main rush over here. He sends Rav Shakeh. Rav Shakeh is his emissary.
All right, but as much as Sheva was.
Yeah.
Taken, you would think Rav Shakeh would be more. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah, but they're still powerful. Nothing has happened yet to Sancheirev. He's still on top of the world. So, they're not going to say what's going to happen to Rav Shakeh.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to torahmediaatlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.